Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think she wants less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxic poisons like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides are playing in our daily lives. And what does Mother Earth make of all this mess? My guest today is Dr. Rachel Massey. She's a senior associate director at TURI, the Toxic Use Reduction Institute in Lowell, Massachusetts. She has advanced degrees in environmental change and management, public policy, and her doctor of science in work environment. She develops policy and manages programs for TURI, a leader in the prevention of harm using a model for moving away from toxics that sets the gold standard. Rachel, thank you for coming on What Mama Wants today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. So in the 1980s, Massachusetts was kind of reeling from a toxic public health disaster in Woburn. There were alarms going off all over the state with newly identified hazardous waste sites. And there was a growing general interest in the public around creating less toxic messes, as well as exposures and diseases among its citizens. So this set the stage for the Massachusetts law in 1989 called the Toxic Use Reduction Act, which then gave birth to TURI, the Toxic Use Reduction Institute, which is established in Lowell, Massachusetts. I wondered if you could tell us about TURI, how it's organized, and what it does for the people of Massachusetts.
Yeah, thank you. So as you explained, the Massachusetts Toxics Use Reduction Act was adopted in 1989, and the goal of this law is basically to find ways to reduce the use of toxic chemicals as a way to protect public health and the environment while also supporting the successes of businesses. The law has a few requirements. It requires that businesses that use a large amount of toxic chemicals have to report on their chemical use every year. They have to do what we call toxics use reduction planning, and they pay a fee to the state, which then supports a variety of services. And the law is implemented by three entities working together: the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, the Office of Technical Assistance and Technology, which provides on-site confidential technical assistance to individual businesses, and the Toxics Use Reduction Institute, or TURI, which is where I am. And so we have a whole range of services that we provide for businesses. And so I guess, but that's the quick intro, and we can go into the details.
I think it's genius, because if you just go after reducing toxics, you're going to get pushback from the industries that use these products to make the products we use. So to incorporate them and work together to make sure you're helping them to do what they really want to do anyway. Nobody really wants to spew toxics into the earth. That's just brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. So, right. So there are some core concepts within the way this law is designed that have been really successful over time. So one is the planning concept. And basically the core insight there is that the law requires businesses to spend time every couple of years analyzing how they're using toxic chemicals and looking at what the options would be for reducing them, whether it's a matter of, you know, just swapping out one chemical for another, just using something safer, or whether it's actually changing their process so that they eliminate the need for that chemical. And the law does not actually require businesses to carry out any one individual option that they identify, but it requires them to spend the time to get the training and to do the analysis to identify those options. And then part of that analysis is to look at whether an option not only is safer, but also is technically feasible and financially feasible. And so then the businesses choose the ones that are really practical and are going to work, and they implement those.
I think it's really brilliant. And, you know, so the big deal is not to filter the toxic things out of the water or the soil once they get in there. The idea is quit putting the toxic stuff out there, right?
Right, exactly. And so another core element of the program is a focus on chemical hazard as opposed to just managing risk. So shall I explain kind of the difference between hazard and risk?
That would be really great.
Okay, so hazard is an inherent property of a chemical. If a chemical causes cancer or causes asthma or causes endocrine disruption, that's an inherent property of that chemical. Risk is a function of hazard and exposure. So if you've got highly hazardous chemical, but you really control exposure a lot, then you could have relatively low risk. The problem is that assessing and managing risk can be kind of a very squishy process with a lot of room for difficulties. Whereas if you just address hazard by completely removing the chemical with that inherent hazard, then you never have to worry about risk. So one of the kind of metaphors we could think of to understand this is, let's say you want to get a pet. So you go out and you get yourself a very fierce little pet dragon and it eats people. Right. So that's an inherent hazard of this dragon. And then you have to worry about having friends over because they might get eaten by the dragon. Okay. So you say, all right, well, I'm going to put it in a cage and I'm going to put a strong lock on the cage. So then you're controlling people's exposure to the dragon and you're reducing risk. But you still have a dangerous mythical creature in your home. And so people might still be a little afraid to come over for a party. So if you just don't get a very dangerous creature and bring it into your home, if you get a little puppy instead, then you've completely eliminated the hazard and you don't have to do that kind of complicated risk management, worry about whether the cage is going to break or you're going to leave the lock open or, you know, all those things.
I love that. That's a really succinct way of putting it.
And I guess I could just say a little bit more about how risk assessment and risk management tends to play out. So a lot of our environmental laws in the US are based on risk assessment. And so basically the way that works is you say, okay, we've got this chemical in our water. How much is in the water? How much water do we drink? How do our bodies process that chemical as it comes in through the water? And that might vary depending if you're large or small, young or old, all sorts of things about your individual body. So you try to kind of estimate all those things, and then you come out with an expected disease burden at the population level from that exposure. So it might be 1 in 10,000 people are going to get cancer because that chemical's in the water, or 1 in 1,000,000 people are going to get cancer because that chemical's in the water. So there's a lot of estimation involved. It's very hard to get a clear answer that everybody can agree on. And then the discussion becomes, what's an acceptable level of excess disease? Are we okay with 1 in 100,000 people getting cancer because we put that chemical in the water? And of course, it's not generally one chemical in the water, right? And there's another chemical, and that might also have a 1 in 1,000,000 risk, and then another chemical, and then those chemicals interact with one another. So it gets pretty complicated. And then the discussion is kind of a difficult one about how much disease are we willing to tolerate that could have been avoided. So the toxics use reduction approach cuts through all of that and just says, let's look upstream and let's look at whether there's a way to completely eliminate that chemical, and then we don't have to worry about that disease burden.
I love that. I just love it. And I love that you, as Turi, go and work with businesses to help them reduce or eliminate toxics that they're using already. So what kinds of sectors do you find yourself working with out there in Massachusetts land?
Yeah, well, we work with a whole range of large and small businesses, as well as working with community organizations. And so just, I guess, a few examples. We've worked with a business that was using a solvent, trichloroethylene, or TCE, to clean wax off ceramic parts. And so we did a project with them where they were able to stop using that toxic solvent and switch over to an ultrasonic cleaning system that just used much safer materials. We also work with businesses in the metal finishing and plating sector, and they use a variety of toxic chemicals, including hexavalent chromium, which is a carcinogen, as well as solvents that often are carcinogens or have other adverse health effects. So we worked with one facility that built a new plating line so that they could switch from hexavalent chromium to trivalent chromium, which is a much safer form of chromium. And then we've worked with other businesses in that sector to eliminate their use of toxic solvents to remove oils and greases from the metal parts that they're working with. We also have worked with a small business in the biotech sector that was using lots of solvents and helped them switch to different equipment so that they could substantially reduce their solvent use. We've worked with a business in the pharmaceutical sector that was using a certain chemical as a surfactant in a medical device, and they wanted to switch to something safer. So we connected them with researchers at University of Massachusetts Lowell to help find safer options and make sure that they would work equally well. So those are just a few examples. So we work with a wide range of sectors, both large and small businesses. One of the sectors that has been really satisfying to work with is dry cleaning. So dry cleaners are often small businesses, often family owned and operated, and they often use a solvent called perchloroethylene, or PERC for short. And PERC is a significant contaminant in urban environments, both because of its use in dry cleaning and in some other sectors, but dry cleaning is a big one. So it turns out there's actually a great safer alternative in this case, which is to switch to what's called professional wet cleaning. And this is a system that uses specialized washers and dryers and tensioning equipment to give the shape back to the clothing after it's been cleaned, and specialized detergents. And so if you switch to professional wet cleaning, then all of those dry clean only clothes can actually just be cleaned with water and detergent. And businesses that make that switch not only find that the clothes actually come out better and cleaner, but they actually can save money over time in most cases. However, it takes some upfront investment to make this all work. They have to purchase different equipment and they have to learn how to do the garment cleaning in a different way. And so what we've done at Turi is we provide small grants to dry cleaners to help them make that switch. And we also provide workshops so that they can meet with other cleaners. So if somebody's made the switch recently, they might hold a little demonstration event at their facility and other dry cleaners can come and see how it works and become confident in that technology. So that's one area that we've enjoyed working in.
I think it's so exciting. Thank you for sharing those examples because they kind of make my heart sing to think that there might be a better way. I feel like this is kind of a European concept you all have of working together to make a smarter, healthier planet while you're making your businesses go.
Right. And there definitely is an important element of collaboration. So actually, sometimes when we're working with larger businesses, the obstacle that they run into is that either they have a supplier that is not supplying them with the safer option, or they have a customer downstream and the customer is asking for the more toxic option because they may not know that there's a safer alternative, or they may have their specifications already all set up so that they are kind of committed to a certain approach. And so sometimes we organize supply chain discussions where people can come together up and down the supply chain and work together to solve these problems.
Yeah, I think that sounds like family therapy. Get everyone
That's right.
together. See if you can work out a better solution.
Right.
So some of your applications around the state of Massachusetts include uses that citizens have, such as artificial turf. Can you tell us more about how you impact those systems?
Sure. Artificial turf is a topic we get lots of questions about. And so we do our best to answer those questions and provide information both about hazards of artificial turf and about the options for creating safer playing surfaces through organic management of natural grass fields. So some of the hazards of artificial turf include the infill, which is sometimes made from waste tire materials. Waste tires contain a large number of toxic chemicals, many of which are known to be hazardous to human health. Then there are also hazards related to materials used in the other parts of the turf system, such as the artificial grass blades. Information has emerged recently about PFAS in the artificial turf grass blades. So we kind of started with all the chemical concerns, since that's our specialty, but we've also ended up fielding a lot of questions related to other hazards, such as excessive heat. The artificial turf surface actually traps solar energy, so that surface gets very hot. So if you're playing on a hot day, it's not just the ambient heat in the air, it's also that very hot surface that you're running or playing on. There are also concerns related to injuries, especially skin abrasions and bacterial infections that can result. And then environmental concerns, including the difficulty in disposing of these artificial turf fields at the end of their useful life, at the end of 8 to 10 years, where do they go? So there are lots of issues. And then in terms of the safer alternatives, we have worked with Massachusetts communities to invest in organic management of natural grass athletic fields. And so they do extra aeration and addition of, you know, sort of carefully chosen fertilizers to build soil health and build a healthy soil ecosystem and a healthy root system. So you get a really resilient playing surface.
I think you have some of the very best information on this industry on the web. You have wonderful research and resources there.
Yeah, actually, you can do turi.org/artificial turf, and that'll take you directly to that page.
Wonderful. I think it's a great resource, and thank you for putting it out there. It's an epidemic in our country, and we're just making more problems for ourselves. Yeah, back to that preventing harm.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Dr. Rachel Massey of the Toxic Use Reduction Institute in Lowell, Massachusetts. She specializes in policy and programs that are all about using less in the first place. Woohoo! Rachel, this work that you are doing is what all my guests really say they're wanting, you know, stop the tap or just stop putting toxics out there. But you all have found a way to work with businesses to do just that in a supported and truly helpful way. Could you tell us about some of your specific wins where your policy work and your programs at Turi have saved Massachusetts residents from toxic exposures that they may not even know they were lucky enough to miss out on?
Sure. Well, I guess just kind of at a bird's eye view, we collect data over time on toxic chemical use. And so, you know, we have some sense of the trends over time. So Massachusetts businesses that are reporting their chemical use under our program have achieved substantial reductions. The first 20 years, 1990 to 2010, they reduced their use by about 40%. And then looking at it, the more recent time period, so 2000 to 2020, the facilities reporting to our program during that time reduced their toxic chemical use by about 75%. That's a production adjusted figure, so it also takes account of changes in their production levels. And they also reduced their on-site releases, that's releases to air, water, and soil, by over 90%. So just in the aggregate, that means we've got less of those toxic chemicals in our air, water, and soil, and importantly, also less in the workplace, because a lot of serious chemical exposures occur in the workplace.
I just feel like queuing up like the clapping sounds right now, because think of how much Massachusetts is saving in healthcare costs of people that don't have cancer, in not cleaning up toxic dumps. That's super expensive, can take 30 years. You know, you're just preventing all the damage.
Right, right. And we think about this sometimes in terms of primary prevention of disease. So this is a concept in public health. If you think about cancer, obviously people develop cancer, you need to treat and attempt to cure cancer. But then if you take a step up, one level up, then you think about screening to make sure that you detect cancers early so that you'll have a better chance of treating them successfully. Then if you take another step up from there, you think about, well, what can we do to prevent that cancer from ever occurring? So that's primary prevention of disease. And toxics use reduction is a form of primary prevention of disease.
I would say that all these figures that Rachel's just shared are available on the Turi website, and that's T-U-R-I.org. It's a wealth of information about specific chemicals, about programs, and about the wins you've had, which are inspiring. I know not every state has what you have, and my hope is that more states will take you up on the model in time.
Yes, and there are some similar programs in other states, although Massachusetts has a unique combination where we have the reporting and the planning requirement, and we've got the three state entities working together to provide services to businesses. So there are other states that have some element of that, that have just an institute similar to Turi, or just a reporting requirement or a planning requirement, and all of that is really important. And we're fortunate to have all those pieces.
Yeah, it's working beautifully. So, Rachel, especially in Massachusetts, where you've already got this built in, what would Mother Earth want in regard to how we handle toxic chemicals?
Well, I would say the most important thing is for us to get out of the way. Nature works really well when left to itself. And we've got these amazing systems that work inside our bodies where hormones at incredibly tiny levels control the development of our bodies from infancy to adulthood. And if we can just stop adding chemicals that disrupt those hormone systems or that put other things awry in the system, then nature can do what it already knows how to do.
So, Rachel, to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your relationship to the earth, if you're game.
Sure.
I'm actually particularly interested to have this part of the interview with you because you told me that you've been thinking about how environmental pollution impacts our health since you were a child. And so this is fun to get to highlight your childhood here.
Yeah.
So as a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside?
Oh, well, I loved picking berries, blueberries and raspberries and wild strawberries and blackberries. That's something I really enjoyed. I also loved looking at insects, especially little tiny ones. Actually, when I was a kid, my family used to spend time in Nova Scotia, and at night we would watch the moths that would come to the window, and there was just an amazing variety of moths, very large ones and all different colors. That's something I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. And what's one thing that you tend to wonder about in nature?
Well, I often wonder about sort of unanswered questions about how toxic chemicals are affecting our health. I mean, there's a lot that we know about things that are happening, but then there are quite a few mysteries as well. And one of the things that I would like to understand better is how our changing exposures over time are affecting our health outcomes over time. I don't know if that really qualifies as something I wonder about nature, but well, it's about how our interaction with nature is occurring.
Absolutely. I mean, we are incredible instruments, but we're natural products as well, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the final question is, what is your favorite baby animal?
Well, this spring I had a chance to spend time walking around a pond where I got to see the Canada geese as they were hatching and then starting to toddle around. And I loved looking at them. They're so funny when they're little. They look like little boats with feet attached. So I really loved watching them. So I think right now that's my favorite baby animal.
And they're so fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
are cute. Mm-hmm. Rachel, you are bright, strategic, and you seem actually to be motivated by love and your love of humans and the earth. I think you might be doing the work that you were born to do, as if it's a calling. And thank you for putting in the years of serious research and education to get to the point where you can see the big picture and help other people to do better by Mother Earth in the process. So thank you for the remarkable work you do and for being my guest today.
Thank you so much. It's really been great to talk with you.
Dr. Rachel Massey of the Toxic Use Reduction Institute in Lowell, Massachusetts. Rachel can be found at turi.org.